Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette on this Wednesday, April 17, 2024. Let's start with the local news on the front page. With a large picture of people examining items on display for Tuesday's silent auction at Illinois' 10th annual Kickin' Cancer event for Coaches vs. Cancer at the Gordyville USA Arena in Gifford. The article by Samuel Lysak continues with about the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club with the title, Best Said, He's a True Leader. Group's pick for Youth of the Year says it helped him acclimate to the U.S. life. New to the States last summer by the way of the Caribbean, Jonathan Telesford was curious to find out how he'd fit in among kids his age in his new home city. First up, the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, where before long he made friends he now considers his second family. One he tries to visit almost every day once school lets out at Centennial. I was new to the area, so I just needed a place to get me accustomed to how the people act and the different normal things that would be going on, said Telesford, a high school freshman. It gave me somewhat of a culture shock in terms of how people express themselves, how open they are, and how generally kinder they are. On Thursday evening, Telesford will be honored as the club's Youth of the Year during the launch of its new fundraiser event, Gals for Great Futures, at Carmen's in Champaign. Club CEO Amy Brown said the night serves to replace and revamp its previous steak and burger dinner fundraiser and will feature a fashion show, live auction, and speech from Telesford, who was selected alongside other teen club members to model outfits on the runway. Jonathan joins in on every project. His academia is strong, and he is also one of our featured peer mediators, Brown said. He's always willing to help out. He volunteers with anything that we have going on here. Best said, he's truly a leader. Since beginning as a regular at the after-school center, Telesford said he became involved in a wide range of activities. He's dabbled in designing clothes through sewing club, enjoyed drawing with graphite in art club, embraced his competitive side in gaming club, and played with remote-control cars in STEM club. His favorite style of fashion involves intricate details, and he's almost finished creating his own satchel. And though it's not usually his main medium, he was inspired to create a geometric painting of different shades of purple because of his love for the color. Telesford was surprised to learn that he'd been chosen for the honor, partly because he didn't even know the organization selected a Youth of the Year. He was still working on his speech Tuesday, but he said he planned to make it about why he first joined the club and his gratitude for the opportunities it's provided to put myself out there. For example, while 35 club members will be modeling clothes from 7 local boutiques on Thursday, Telesford and 5 other teens were awarded $250 each to create their own outfits for the runway. I'm happy because I'm putting myself out there and I'm facing one of my big fears, which is a large crowd, he said. So it helps me to be able to handle to speak and walk and allow people to look at me while I'm in a large crowd, as one of the main subjects of the people. Money raised through Thursday's fundraiser will go towards supporting operations at the club's Teen Center and Martin Center, which serves elementary-age children. Brown estimated that 35 kids come to the Teen Center and 90 come to the Martin Center every night. The two locations provide access to computer labs, gymnasiums, games, hygiene products, and homework help to students who otherwise don't have activities to take part in after school. Brown said the centers also supply a hot meal every night. Since the steak dinner hadn't been held in person since before the pandemic, and the club's golf-focused fundraiser typically drew male participants, Brown said the organization wanted to create the Gals for Great Futures event to bring together women to raise money for the kids. Male board members and other male volunteers will be gussied up in suits and serving as waiters for the event, which will also feature an address on mental health from Karen Sims, local founder of the CU Trauma and Resilience Initiative, and a video presentation from one of the club's original youth members, Joe Stovall. The Youth of the Year speech will be made in honor of Will Patterson, Don Moyer's chief teen officer who died on April 2nd and was memorialized Sunday in a celebration of life at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The fundraiser will ultimately bring together the community. What one teen said is the reason he comes to the club whenever he can. "I would say it's like a family to me, but also a professional family," Telesford said. "They would help me with homework, some questions I might not know. We have our little jokes, we play different games. This is where I met most of my friends." Another article on the front page from Savoy is entitled "Curtis Road Deal with County to be Weighed" by Jana Wiersema. Champaign County is expected to provide up to $862,500 to help fund work on the Curtis Road underpass and related road improvements. Savoy's Village Board will consider whether to approve an intergovernmental agreement with Champaign County regarding the project at its 7 p.m. meeting today. The issues with that railroad crossing cause problems for county residents in terms of emergency vehicle access when a train is going through, said County Executive Steve Summers. "It's a safety concern." The county board has already approved the intergovernmental agreement, he said. Local officials wrote in a resolution that Savoy and Champaign County have jointly planned and advocated for improvements to the Curtis Road corridor between Prospect Avenue and First Street for several decades. The project includes a structure to carry the Canadian National Railroad over Curtis Road, just east of U.S. 45. Village President John Brown said in a previous interview that the street would be lowered 6 feet, while the tracks would be raised 15 feet. Per the proposed agreement, the project is still in the engineering phase and is expected to be bid on by Illinois Department of Transportation in November 2025. Construction is estimated to run from March 2026 to November 2028. The underpass has been on the radar in the area for probably 20-25 years, Brown told the News Gazette. "I'm just glad that we're finally able to make some progress on that. Getting that grant last year has really helped us achieve that goal." The underpass project was awarded a federal grant of over $22.6 million in June of 2023. According to village officials, Savoy had previously secured a little under $17.7 million and is using these funds to cover design and engineering costs. Other funding sources include $2 million in congressionally directed spending. Canadian National is also funding a portion of the project. The proposed agreement between Savoy and Champaign County states that the project has an estimated cost of $40,365,400. Brown said that this is a preliminary estimate. In his understanding that village staff have identified around $48 million from various sources that could go to this project, if need be, he added that if inflation proves to be an even greater issue than expected, there are also some parties who have indicated they might be willing to increase their contributions. It's anticipated that, in addition to the county's funding, Savoy will put $1,341,000 toward the project. These funds are already in reserve, Brown said. In terms of the agreement state, the village will provide funding for Phase 1 and Phase 2 project engineering costs, but both parties will cover the local share of construction cost. The county share of the construction funding shall be $862,500, the agreement states. The village will pay for the remaining local share of the project construction costs. While village costs may vary based on the actual project cost, the county share will not increase. "We're really happy that the village has been able to secure significant federal funding to get this done," Summers said. "Otherwise, they could never have afforded it. So this is a great example of federal, state, and local cooperation and providing funds to address community needs." And also on the front page, in an article by Jim Dye from Urbana, auditor fires back against his critics on county board. After being targeted for public denunciation by some county board members, Champaign County Auditor George Danos is waging what he calls a forceful Self-defense. Danos has hired Champaign lawyers James Martinkus to press his case before critical county board members. He also is scheduled to speak Thursday to the county board in opposition to a looming plan to ask voters to approve a quarter-cent sales tax, supported by some of his critics. Democratic board member Emily Rodriguez last week released a tentative resolution to censor Danos for conduct unbecoming a county official and putting Champaign County in future financial peril. There is no indication that the resolution or a revised version will be the subject of a vote at Thursday's board meeting, but it still could be. After releasing the proposed resolution, Rodriguez invited inquiries by the News Gazette, but has still declined to respond to them. Danos has dismissed the resolution's allegations as untrue and politically motivated. "It is the fact that I am doing my job and has brought out this hornet's nest," said Danos, a Democrat who is running unopposed in the November general election. Meanwhile, Martinkus said he's been working with Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz and one of her assistants to minimize the issue. "I'm trying to reason with them and make this thing go away," he said. At the same time, Martinkus charged some board members have launched a personal vendetta against Danos and are trying to make him look bad. Martinkus pointed out that as auditor, Danos is an independent elected official, not subject to board dictates. The 22-member majority Democratic board also is an independent elected body. Because of that, Martinkus noted that board is free to pass any resolution it prefers, but he contends the resolution presents allegations as facts, and said if the resolution is not truthful, not accurate, they have got to be careful. The cat, however, is out of the bag. The censure resolution accuses Danos of violating county travel policy, employee intimidation, engaging in prohibited political activity, absenteeism, violation of discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct policy, and violation of county information technology policy. The charges are based on information sought in response to a Freedom of Information Act request to the county executive's office that was submitted by Wayne Williams, the Democratic formal supervisor of assessments in Cunningham Township. The information, some of it going back years, included a variety of complaints against Danos from subordinates in his office. In response, the county board held an emergency committee meeting at which Democratic board member Stephanie Furtado characterized the auditor's office as dysfunctional. Last week, Rodriguez, also a Democrat, presided over a labor committee meeting that addressed concerns about the auditor's office and reviewed a draft response to it, presumably the censure resolution. Danos characterized the board's laundry list of concerns as Saul Alinsky tactics of intimidation. That will not be successful. Danos and board Democrats mostly have been at odds in recent months. He charged his critics are motivated by political animus over his opposition to a sales tax increase, while they contend their only interest is in good government. Board members recently tried without success to abolish the auditor's office, but Danos was able to rally public support and persuade a board majority to reject the plan supported by, among others, Furtado and Rodriguez. Now comes the sales tax issue. Danos said he has repeatedly been denied an opportunity to speak in opposition at a board meeting. He insists the county doesn't need the revenue and that it is his obligation as auditor to defend taxpayers. Let's take a look on what's on tap today as we kick off the Eberfest 25. At 10 a.m., the festival director Nate Cohn and his special guest Eric Roberts join Brian Barnhart on Penny. Listen to WDWS podcast later today on our website. At 4:30 p.m., per tradition, the party starts with the by-invite-only gala at the U of I President's House. Your hosts, Tim Colleen and Roberta Johnson Colleen. Then at 6:30 p.m., the lone screening of screening of Day One at the Virginia Theater with the 1983 biographical drama Star 80, co-starring Roberts and Mariel Hemingway. Continuing in our county, an article from Rantoul by Dave Hinton. Rantoul planned to add 200 additional jobs. An additional 200 jobs will be added to Rantoul's Jeld-Wen window and door manufacturing plant as a result of the closure of a Wisconsin facility and their movement to Champaign County. Karen Kleba, head of global public relations for the company, said the company expects the vast majority of the consolidation to be done by the end of August. The company announced last week it would be closing its Hawkins, Wisconsin wood window plant, which employs 340 people. Kleba said the Rantoul facility has the capacity to add more lines, and our Hawkins facility does not. We have identified a lot of redundancies. They're both wood window facilities. Neither has been operating at full capacity for some time, so the decision has made and was to consolidate wood window production into one facility. Kleba said Rantoul also has a larger available workforce, whereas the Hawkins facility, there we would struggle to hire the number we need to support the consolidated production. She said employees at the Wisconsin facility are welcome to apply for employment at the Rantoul factory. Starting employees will be paid $21.50 an hour. The company has also been in contact with other Hawkins area employers to let them know of the availability of the Jeld-Wen workers. According to Kleba, multiple market factors are in play: the higher cost of business freight, raw materials and labor, and lower volume. All of those contribute to the changes that are necessary, she said. This is all part of the Jeld-Wen transformation journey to simplify and modernize our facility and also continue to meet our customers' needs, Kleba said. Plant manager Justin Thompson said the mood at the Rantoul plant would be like, I would say, is positive and with about embracing the opportunity, but also very aware of what's going on with the company. Among the tasks to get ready for the changeover is the move of equipment and material from Wisconsin to Rantoul. Thompson said, to be added to the Rantoul site will be a multitude of production jobs as well as quality, maintenance, receiving, and shipping positions. We'll have some additional equipment shipped to Rantoul and a majority of the equipment we already have here. At the end of 5 months, we're anticipating to be fully ramped up. Caradco opened the Rantoul plant in 1976. Jeld-Wen bought the facility in 1997. Norco built the original Hawkins plant, which was purchased by Jeld-Wen in 1996. And from Champaign by Luke Taylor, a national fitness campaign. First of its kind in the state, next new outdoor exercise court opens on the University of Illinois campus. A new outdoor fitness court studio featuring workout equipment and a multi-use area had its grand opening on East Gregory, on Tuesday. It will be open 24/7, unless someone has reserved the space, which was made possible by a $50,000 grant from the National Fitness Campaign. Alana Harris, Associate Director of Assessment and Student Wellness for Campus Recreation, said Campus Rec has been looking for ways to reduce barriers to fitness infrastructure, which aligns with the goals of the National Fitness Campaign. We were prepared to do some renovations on some existing basketball courts anyway, so doing those projects at the same time made a lot of fiscal sense for us, she said. The concept of outdoor fitness equipment has been around for a long time, but really started taking off during the pandemic. Harris said this will be the first facility of its kind in a higher education setting in Illinois. The National Fitness Campaign also provided the design for the court, so it comes with features like a site you can pull up on your phone for different guided workouts to follow. There is also a description of how to use the equipment printed on the dividing wall between the equipment and the multi-use area. Students have been excited about what it looks like and the opportunity that it affords, Harris said. Though the court is open to anyone, not just students. Alongside the actual court, this new area includes solar tables funded by an internal agent. of $10,000, excuse me, an internal grant of $10,000 from the U of I Student Sustainability Committee. Harris said that since the area was previously a basketball court, there wasn't much in the way of shade. These solar tables will provide some refuge from the sun when it gets really hot out there in the middle of the summer, she said. They'll also provide a place to charge your phone, perhaps to see those guided workouts. In Jay Simpson's take, nothing glamorous about living in the struggle. Coming from where I come from and how I was raised, being able to see a 30 years old without any convictions or felonies is a huge accomplishment. I know it sounds crazy to say that obeying the law is an accomplishment, but peer pressure and trying to fit in has ruined or nearly ruined 80% of my childhood friends' lives. I've seen kids who have had everything a kid could ask for or dream of still crave the feeling of being in poverty or living in the struggle, and I've never could grasp why. I mean, it was the point to where they would completely abandon their family, who provide them with the absolute best of everything they need. And more, just to portray an image that looks cool. I can almost guarantee that any kid that grew up poor and in poverty would give anything to be able to live life with no worries and have everything they needed. From the outside looking in, it can look like people are glorifying the hood, but in all reality, they are not. They understand it's not fun or cute, but they make the best out of their situations, and they look happy doing it, which is why I believe so many privileged kids admire and desire to live that lifestyle. It's only until they get themselves caught up in the something mommy and daddy can't get them out of before they realize they were going about it all wrong, and now they have to deal with the consequences. Take it from me, a guy who has never been incarcerated but been around it his whole life. I visited prisons and jails to see loved ones ever since I can remember, and still do this to this day. That is not a place you want to go, because once you're in there, it's a whole different world, and there's nothing anyone can do to save you. It's not worth it at all. If you are blessed enough to come from a privileged family, you should embrace it, because there's a lot of unfortunate kids like the ones I grew up with who would love to be in your shoes. Everything is not always what it seems. What may look fun to you is actually real life for someone else. Keep that in mind. Much love. Another article by Jana Wiersema from Champaign is about the solar development regulations on the agenda of the Champaign Plan Commission. Industrial zoned areas wouldn't need special permissions, other sites said. A proposal from the City of Champaign's Planning Department would allow large solar developments to be built in industrial areas, but require special approval for other zoning districts. The Champaign Plan Commission will consider whether to forward an amendment to the City's zoning ordinance to the City Council with a positive recommendation during its 4 p.m. meeting today. The proposed change includes a new land use category for power generation facilities, which are defined as standalone facilities with the sole purpose of generating power. In discussing the need for the change, planning staff wrote that the City of Champaign has received an increased number of requests to build large-scale solar arrays in recent months. The trend has coincided with a rise in rooftop and accessory solar panels installations on homes and businesses. At present, the zoning ordinance does not include a definition or regulations for large-scale solar developments. So each individual project requires a special use permit regardless of the zoning district where it is proposed. Senior Planner for Advanced Planning Lacey Rains Lowe said the city has generally received proposals to build these facilities on land on the immediate edge of its municipal boundary. However, the Planning Department sees these as potential growth areas for new development, based on factors such as access to sanitary sewer, transit, and community amenities. The majority of the land that's immediately on the perimeter of the city's existing municipal boundary that's within our growth area is land that we might want to be able to have new housing, for example, Rains Lowe said, including power generation facilities. in the zoning ordinance would ensure that they are built in suitable locations that have minimal public impact and are compatible with nearby land uses, planning staff stated in a report to the commission. While the impetus for this change is needed to address solar projects, the definition developed would also apply to power generation facilities of all types, including fossil fuel power plants, they added. However, the regulation for power generation facilities do not apply to rooftop solar panels or freestanding solar arrays that are accessory to existing development, planning staff said. Such structures are permitted by right on existing developed lots when they generate power for the principal use of the property. The proposal would make power generation facilities a permitted use in the heavy industrial zoning district. In the light industrial zoning district, these facilities would be allowed provisionally with a condition that the lots where they are built must be at least 5 acres or larger. Lots of this size would provide adequate space for the facility to operate, planning staff wrote. The city has lots zoned light industrial that are under 5 acres and are adjacent to commercial or residential areas. So the size provision would ensure that facilities develop adjacent to compatible land uses. If the proposed amendment is approved by the City Council, developers who wish to build large-scale solar arrays in other zoning districts would need to go through a special planning process to seek approval, Rains Lowe said. She added that the department expects to see more proposals of these kinds of facilities in the future. The amendment allows us to have another tool in the toolbox to deal with these proposals, so we can find the best location that balances all of those sustainability goals and infrastructure goals and allows us to grow in a compact and contiguous way, Rains Lowe said. And in Ogden, by Dave Hinton, Champaign County Sheriff's Office, 3 Ogden break-ins under investigation. The Champaign County Sheriff's Office said it has a suspect, that it believes was responsible for weekend break-ins at Ogden businesses. It's a matter of finding him and conducting an interview with him, said Lieutenant Curtis Apperson, adding that he thinks the same person was involved in all 3 incidents. It is believed the person broke into or attempted to break into Legacy 1251 Ogden Laundromat and the Ogden Royal Fire Station. Ashley Hutchins of Legacy 1251, a clothing and sporting equipment store, said someone broke in through the front door and made off with a roll of quarters out of the cash register. No merchandise was taken, Hutchins said. The sheriff's office notified Hutchins of the break-in Saturday morning. Rick Buckley, owner of Ogden Laundromat, known by many in the village as Buckley Gaming Cafe, said the culprit attempted to remove the change machine off the wall of the laundromat, causing about $2,000 worth of damage to the wall and machine. Buckley said the laundromat was open at the time, and the would-be thief was unable to get any money. I got it on camera, Buckley said, noting police rolled up about the time of the attempted theft, and the culprit ducked down and then ran from the scene, just out of reach of law enforcement. Apperson said officers were dispatched to Ogden at 4:37 a.m. Saturday after a firefighter who came to the fire station saw a person leaving the scene and then getting into a vehicle. Apperson said the evidence was found at the scene and saw pry marks on the door. Officers began checking nearby businesses and came upon the laundromat where the thief fled when he saw them. Let's end this first half of the News Gazette with the history. Area history in 2024, by a vote of 3-3, the Urbana Board of Education tied on a motion to accept a report of the Building and Grounds Committee unfavorable to changing the location of the school building to be erected in the northern part of Urbana, and Judge Roy C. Freeman, president, cast the deciding vote in favor of acceptance. The final action of the board, therefore, is a decision to go ahead with the plans for building on North Market Street site. In 1974, organizers of the world's longest soccer marathon to benefit University of Illinois Wheelchair Athletics are hoping to raise $5,000 and play for 52 consecutive hours on campus. And in 2009, Jeffrey Walkington, a Chicago private school administrator, has been named principal at University Lab High School in Urbana. His appointment is pending approval of the University of Illinois Board of Trustees at its May 21st meeting in Chicago. In international history, on today, on April 17th in 1961, some 1,500 CIA-trained Cuban exiles launched the disastrous Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in an attempt to topple Fidel Castro, whose forces crushed the incursion by the third day. And on this date, in 1521, Martin Luther went before the Diet of Worms to face charges stemming from his religious writings. Luther was later declared an outlaw by Holy Roman Emperor Charles V. In 1961, The Apartment won the Academy Award for Best Picture of 1960. Burt Lancaster was named Best Actor for Elmer Gantry, while the Best Actress Award went to Elizabeth Taylor for Butterfield 8. I'll be back with the second half of the News Gazette in just a bit.